Welcome to El Tel and John's La Liga Weekly. Ladies and gentlemen, look at the league table and rest easy. Order has been restored to a chaotic world. Real Madrid, Barcelona slugging it out for the title. Atletico third, providing as much challenge as any team reasonably can with 7 goals from 8 matches. But what we don't know is whether any of these teams are actually that good. Are Real Madrid the side of Bale's snaking assist and Modric's thunderbolt? Or the team that conceded 2 goals to a bloke from Bruges called Dennis, who literally can't shoot without falling over? Barca beats Sevilla because, and forgive me if this gets very technical, they've got players who can kick the ball into the net, and Sevilla have got Luke de Jong. Poor old Chicharito, he took a 90 grand a week pay cut to leave West Ham's bench and instead watched de Jong's game of how many different ways can one player miss a sitter? To be fair, the Dutchman's not the La Liga striker in the worst form. That's surely Sandro Ramirez, who could have won it for Valladolid against Atletico from the penalty spot. Instead, the ball landed in row X, leaving the former Everton man without a goal in 53 matches. Remember when he scored 16 in a season with Malaga? My rudimentary maths tells me that at his current rate of scoring, by the time Sandro scores another 16 goals, we'll all be dead. And speaking of interminable waits, who, like me, spent their Friday night watching VAR taking 3 hours to decide on an offside, which is very obviously not offside. Apparently, they couldn't be absolutely certain because they didn't have a camera in line and they were presumably waiting for one to grow organically. There we are, a weekend in La Liga. Terry Gibson is fresh from his commentary on 9-man Barcelona's win over Sevilla. Terry, if you take your boots along to the A-bar game, I think you'll get a game at centre-half.
It was interesting seeing Piqué picking up a card, so he gets banned for that game. He's got to hope that Longley, obviously Longley will be back from suspension, but he's got to hope maybe that Umtiti's back as well, because Eibar away, they're playing well now, Eibar. That is never an easy game. And we know that if there is a weakness at the back for Barcelona, if they haven't got the available centre-backs because Piqué suspended, then it's going to be a difficult encounter for Barcelona. So that's a risk. And obviously with the Araujo, the young player coming on, I thought personally it was a red card. I don't know why Dembele's got so het up over it because the game's won. And I think it's a straightforward decision. Once the referee gives the foul, it's a red card offence. I think it's quite straightforward. So it was quite a dramatic game. It was a game of contrast. I thought Sevilla played really well. The scoreline flatters Barcelona. But it, that's what you get when you spend hundreds and hundreds of millions of euros on world-class strikers, world-class attacking players. Then when the chance does come the way of Luis Suarez, he tucks these away. Spectacular goal. Dembele does likewise. As opposed to Sevilla, who at the moment can't find anyone. Well, they have tried one player to replace the prolific Wissam Ben Yedder. I wonder if he'd been available for Sevilla tonight with the chances that came Luke de Jong's way, then the scoreline might have been different, particularly if Sevilla got the first goal of the game.
Yeah, although Chicharito and his agent might point out that if he'd been on the pitch instead of de Jong, and de Jong's got a good record in the Dutch league, hasn't he? He's just found it very difficult to start with. However, my concern from Barca's point of view, Terry, is that now you can enjoy it, and yeah, enjoy a 4-0 win with 4 brilliantly taken goals, fantastic. There was enough there to worry about, wasn't there, when it gets to the latter stages, say, of the Champions League and maybe their games against Atletico or Real Madrid to come. They were open enough and vulnerable enough with a lack of energy of the press that Sevilla created chances pretty well. So if you're, say, Liverpool, Man City looking at that, you're thinking, yeah, we can score goals against this team.
Yeah, I think in fairness to Valverde, though, it was a makeshift back four. You had 4 players that were all right-footed. You had a young player who hasn't played many games playing alongside Pico, did all right for most of the game. Yeah. Sergio Roberto, I thought we'd seen him the last of him playing as a right back because of injuries to other players, 2 left backs in particular, Alba and Junior Firpo, means that he's playing right back. Semedo's playing left back. I'm not convinced that Frankie de Jong is a defensive midfield player in the Barcelona, true to the Barcelona style, i.e., for example, Busquets, the Busquets role. I think De Jong is nowhere near as good a defender as Busquets. I don't ever see a time where De Jong is allowing Piqué to venture forward and De Jong stepping in and playing as centre-back for a couple of minutes. I don't see him stepping in between the 2 centre-backs and making a back 3. I don't see him spotting danger as well as Busquets. But I do see De Jong as an outstanding footballer that probably should play in that role. He didn't look comfortable in that role tonight. I know he's played there for Ajax, but it's primarily as a distributor of the ball from the back rather than a defensive midfield player whose defensive job is probably the most important aspect of playing in that role for Barcelona. So I think that's another reason possibly why Barcelona conceded so many chances tonight. So I think there's a few issues for Valverde to solve. I'm sure he will, and it'll be far easier with him having players back from injury. Jordi Alba was on the bench tonight. The international break will probably allow Junior Firpo to come back as well. He might be a possibility in one of the centre-back positions when they play Eibar. So, of course, Messi is the biggest bonus, and Suarez, whose form looks decidedly dodgy, apart from when it comes to finishing chances. I mean, it's uncanny the way that he has slow starts to the season normally, but this season, he when it comes to finishing chances that come his way, he looks really sharp. So, yes, his game's untidy outside the penalty box, but the most important job for a striker, as we see for De Jong up front for Sevilla, is to find the back of the net. And Suarez has done that magnificently so far this season.
In your commentary tonight, Terry, you and Lucas were joking about how many goals Messi had scored. Exactly 100 from outside of the penalty area, which is an incredible record, isn't it? There are great players who don't score 100 goals in their career, let alone 100 goals from outside of the box. And it's no particular coincidence that after this pretty stuttering start to the season, they've won every game in which Messi has started.
Yeah, and that, clearly, I mean, it's amazing seeing a player that's having a pre-season in serious league games and Champions League matches. And it's quite remarkable, actually, how quick he's picking up the speed of it all. Yeah, he's going to make a huge difference, obviously. It was smashing to see the enthusiasm he showed after scoring as well. I think it was a little bit of frustration that there was his third attempt from a set piece. He had a couple of other chances that were near misses or saved by the goalkeeper. That Maisie dribble, in particular, where I foolishly said we've seen that 400 times before. That's the only thing that's going to stop him performing at the level he is if he's not as motivated. But clearly, you saw when he scored his first goal of the season tonight that Valverde will be hoping there's another 40 of those. And if he keeps up the pace that he's shown in previous 12, 13 seasons, that'll be exactly the case as long as he can stay fit and healthy.
Let's have a look at Real Madrid as well. So, I mean, similar story really, Terry, isn't it? In that they, I don't know if they did get away with it against Bruges. It was a draw. It doesn't leave them particularly well set in the Champions League, but there's time to put that right. They looked like they were playing well, coasting against Granada. But even then, they managed to make hard work of it in the end. So as I said in the intro, but I could have asked you this, and I have been asking you this for about 4 years now. How good are Real Madrid? Are they the team with that brilliant Bale assist, you know, Hazard's goal, Modric's thunderbolt, Ame's goal and all of that? Or are they this bizarrely vulnerable team?
They're the bizarrely vulnerable team. I think I was holding fault on and how they'd improved in recent weeks, the winners against Sevilla in particular, because we need a run of about 10 games where they don't have a game like Bruges, where they don't have a second half where they concede two goals against Granada and suddenly a comfortable 3-0 victory and a comfortable afternoon's work becomes a bit of a struggle. And all right, James gets the fourth and he wraps it up and takes it away from Granada. But there was a spell in that game at 3-2 where Granada possibly thought they were back in with a chance of a spectacular draw at Real Madrid. So it's to be what I don't know what we expect, because it's the same players apart from Eden Hazard. It's exactly the same group that have been doing this for a number of seasons now, where, you know, they perform miraculously well, particularly in Champions League football, come up with some great performances, great results, great individual performances, and have struggled in La Liga. So it's until we see numerous changes in the starting 11 of Real Madrid, it appears this is going to be what happens. It's great to watch. They at times at the weekends, they were fantastic again. But I guess the performance against Bruges would have been playing on their mind, and it was important they got off to a good start, which is what they did after 2 minutes, and then really sort of rammed home their authority. Hazard getting a goal for Real Madrid is a big plus for Zidane. The performance of Bale was good, but we're probably talking about an hour and then a sloppy 20-25 minutes that allowed Granada right back into the game, and frankly they should never have been. They should have been outside even at 3-0 if Real Madrid don't score anymore, at least don't concede. You know, is it a mistake from the Areola fella to concede the penalty? Then Dominguez Duarte gets the second for Granada, and then it's everyone's panicking at the Bernabeu, and it shouldn't have been that way. But I think that's what we're going to see from Real Madrid. We're going to see games where they're going to be absolutely brilliant, and then we're going to see games like we've seen in the last couple. Their form is going to fluctuate from being a superb team to being one that doesn't look as if they can win anything. But you know, as I've said before, that the strongest 11 is the players that have won them Champions League galore. And on their day, they can cause any team problems. It's just, are they going to have the amount of games that they need on a consistent basis to be successful in La Liga and to be successful in the Champions League again? I very much doubt it, if I'm being honest.
How good is Fede Valverde? Does he fill the gap that we've talked about of them needing another hard-working midfield player?
I think it's pleasing to see him get the opportunities because of the sheer lack of numbers. It'd be interesting to see how Zidane treats Isco, now he's back from injury, whether he sees him as one of the midfield players, whether he sees James as a midfield player. But it's pleasing to see any young player get an opportunity. Do they need one or two more? Possibly. The Casemiro position is a problem, isn't it, if he's ever missing. Then there's someone's going to have to be the definitive holding midfield player that tries to tie it all together, and they don't appear to have a replacement for Casemiro. So that's the situation. I think Valverde's a really promising young player. It's wise for Zidane to have someone like that in the squad that he can use on a regular basis to make sure that Kroos and Modric in particular do get a rest period. But there's no replacement for Casemiro, so unless Valverde can turn into that sort of player, which I don't think he is. I think he's an all-rounder. He's box-to-box. He's good on the ball. He's strong, aggressive, athletic. And his career is certainly progressing in the right direction. So I think the Casemiro position is ultimately the biggest problem in midfield for Real Madrid, that they don't have a replacement or they don't have someone that can compete for that position alongside Casemiro.
Now, I know you were travelling, Terry, so you probably didn't see much of, or did you see much of Atletico? If you didn't see, you didn't miss much. 0-0 draw with Valladolid, and the most notable thing was Sandro's penalty miss. But they can be really frustrating, Atletico, can't they? Because you know, this title is here to be won this season.
Yes, I totally agree with you. And I'm looking at their goals for records, goals for seven. Goals, yeah, against four, seven in eight games. So they're scoring under a goal a game. They're conceding one every two. At the end of the season, it's going to be something like 37 goals scored and 16 goals against us. It's somehow Simeone's got to come up with a solution to find a partnership up front and to find a system that serves that partnership. If Costa Morata play, Costa has to be better. If Costa Morata play, they have to get lots of crosses into the box, and Costa in particular has to improve and be a threat. Morata's been injured, been suspended. It's hard to judge him at the moment. I prefer the Morata-João Felix partnership. We're seeing different midfield players. You're right. The title is up for grabs this season. It's not the best version of Barcelona yet. It's not the best version of Real Madrid yet. And the Atletico can't afford to be dropping points and not scoring away from home against Valladolid. And I'm not being disrespectful to Valladolid, but it's the type of game that Atletico Madrid, if they want to win the title, have to make sure they come away with the 3 points. And one long-range attempt from Correa that hits the post, pretty much that was about it, really. And if Sandro, I've looked at the penalty on lots of replays, there's a little bit of movement. The ball almost sits up, he takes it almost like a David Beckham free kick, and his standing foot just moves the ball slightly before he strikes it. It's 800 days, which is like two and a half years since he scored. I actually thought it was a good sign for Valladolid if they can recapture the form he showed at Malaga. Now, his career's taken a real pummeling in terms of not playing on a regular basis, losing confidence. It was admirable that he stepped up and took the penalty. But he obviously, people are going to see, blazes it over the bar, and the game ended up quite a drab 0-0 draw in the end, but which would be pleasing for Valladolid, but certainly not for Atletico.
Let's take a break, shall we? We'll come back with the the best of the rest of La Liga, and I'll tell you why I'm banned from Twitter. Right, so welcome back. Right, I promised you I'd tell you why. I think I'm just suspended, but they're a bit cagey about telling you when you're back on. Now, do you think I've been spreading hate and abusing politicians on Twitter, or do you think I shared a goal from the La Liga? Yes, it is the latter, I'm afraid.
Shared a goal?
Yeah. Honestly, they don't know. I mean, I know we rail against the organisational incompetence, but they don't know who their friends are and who their enemies are at La Liga. Literally, it was so when it wasn't on air in the UK, you know, the YouTube minute and a half ones, I retweeted loads of those. But there was a share button on the YouTube videos. You know, you click the button and you can share it. They could disable that if they don't want people sharing it. So I did that. And that got me. And then I retweeted, you know, Chema's goal from a couple of years ago, the volley. I shared that.
Yeah.
And so that it obviously
pushed them over the edge.
Precisely. Yes. Yes. Outrageous. So yeah, honestly, they drive you nuts, slightly, you know. It's very frustrating. Anyway, I'm probably better off not on Twitter for a few days because I only read it and get annoyed about the state of the world. So they might have done me a favour. Right,
John Mad Dog Driscoll, I'm going to call you now, Mad Dog.
let's get on with promoting La Liga for them, even though they're determined that they don't want you to. Right, let's have a look. What else have we? Let's have a look at the other decent games from this weekend. I want to talk about Villarreal. So they lost to Osasuna. Enjoyed the game, actually. It was good, wasn't it? So Pau Torres, yep. It's worth talking about them and their call-ups, because Pau Torres celebrated this call-up to the Spain national team with a goal. And Santi Cazorla is in the squad at the age of 34. All of that, and they lose to Osasuna.
Well, it says a lot about the squad, actually. I'm not sure how they're playing it with the manager with his squad selections, but Villarreal got four players in it. Albiol's been called up. Gerard Moreno's been called up. No issue with Gerard Moreno. Albiol, I'm not sure where the future is there for, I think he's 34. And between Atletico Madrid, Barcelona and Real Madrid, they've got four players. So it's quite bizarre. And just when you think Villarreal are turning a corner, that we're getting to see the true Villarreal, they slip and slide again. So it's... You could say similar to Athletic Bilbao. You could say at the moment similar to Real Sociedad as well. Hopefully Sevilla don't slip down the table. Because I was hoping that we would have the genuine, I'm not talking title contenders, I'm talking top four, fourth place contenders, that we would then see a genuine, you know, race to be any of those teams are capable. Valencia did it last season. Getafe run them close. I'm hoping Sevilla, Betis, Real Sociedad, Villarreal, Athletic Bilbao. Forgive me if I've forgotten anybody else. And it's a shame. But when you look at the form of Osasuna at home in particular, he's 29 unbeaten now at home. It is a real boost to their players. That they feel invincible in that stadium. To take that form from the second tier to the top tier and still have that belief is remarkable. And let's not forget they played... Barcelona at home and drew. So that was an important win because they've done well Osasuna without winning games. They've been drawing a lot. So that was a huge win for them to come from behind against a team that's not playing bad at the moment, that should be doing better. It was a more than tidy performance from Osasuna. Roncalio scoring a goal. I don't know what he was doing out there. He should have been in the penalty box attacking the set piece as one of the centre-backs. But they obviously saw something in him that thought they could sit him just outside the penalty area and he could unleash a worldie into the corner. So Jimmy Avila is one of the performers of the weekend. I thought his performance, he's a real maverick, isn't he? Sucks down. He doesn't look particularly athletic. He works hard. He's aggressive. He takes the mickey out of defenders. He antagonises defenders. Yeah, we saw last season and again now this season that he's capable of scoring goals in his own way, and it was a bit of a fluke. The goal, he misses it, hits it into the ground. I thought Asenjo could have done better, but it was a very good result and performance from Osasuna to come from behind.
I think in terms of that tier of team, I think how I put it, to I'd like one of those teams in the, you know, the Valencia to Villarreal bracket and the teams sort of around there. I'd like one of those to threaten to get into the top three, so that so that we're not drawing a big line 1-2-3 or probably 1-2 and then Atleti never really genuinely threatening to win the league, and then a big battle for fourth, because the battle for fourth is better than not having a battle for fourth. But you're flogging it a bit there, aren't you? When you're trying to get excited battle for fourth, it would be good if they were genuinely.
I'd settle this season for Real Madrid threatening to win the league, because Atletico have come closer than Real Madrid in the last couple of seasons. Yet they've been miles behind Barcelona. So I think that would be first and foremost that we get a title race. And then it would be nice to see that genuine. I know there's drawing a line, but they're three big clubs now. Atletico are not as big, but they've joined that top group, haven't they? The top tier in La Liga, where it would be a huge surprise if they fell out the top three, for instance. But the potential is there for some of these others to. But we're seeing Villarreal slipping. Real Sociedad have lost their last two. Athletic Bilbao have lost their last two, the 1 point in the last three. And it's a real shame, because we don't all expect Granada to stay up there, where they are in the league, where they were before the start of the weekend. It was top v second, Real Madrid against Granada. I'd like to see with the international break, those teams that started off the season, Real Sociedad certainly fall into that category, of starting off looking really well, playing attractive football, great to watch. And then, unfortunately, for Real Sociedad, losing back-to-back games and losing that little bit of momentum that they had.
Yeah, I think it's probably more accurate that there's a smaller gap between that level of team and the teams down the bottom end. Because the teams down the bottom end are, you know, as you say, Getafe beat Real Sociedad, etc. And then you look down and Espanyol are in big trouble. They lost to Mallorca, looking genuine candidates to go down at the moment, even though they're doing okay in the Europa League. I think there's a lot of strength down the bottom end of La Liga. And there's not a massive gap, is there, between probably 19th and 4th in truth at the moment. So anyway, on Espanyol, how much trouble are they in? How much trouble is Gallejo in?
He's in more trouble than Espanyol, because there's so many games left to play, and you've got plenty of time to turn this form around. But it appears now that the club are not believing that he's the manager to take them forward. I was working with Guillaume, and he seems to be pretty sure that the change is going to be made. And actually, Pablo Machin is the manager that's earmarked to step in pretty soon, almost immediately. So expect that to happen this week. David Gallego being sacked, relieved of his position. Which you always feel for a coach when they've done so much good work behind the scenes. When they do take the manager's job eventually, there will always, more often than not, comes a time. There's no going back. He can't go back to the B team now. So he's obviously done good work with the young players at the club. But once you've been manager, there's no going back. And you know, perhaps that's the reason why Alguacil has been, the Real Sociedad manager, has been reluctant in the past to take it, because there's only one way it's going to end. And unless you're ready, which Gallego appears not to be. But I think Pablo Machin would be a good appointment for Espanyol if they can get him. The former Girona manager did so well. The former Sevilla manager was probably unfairly treated. I think he would be a fantastic appointment for Espanyol. And they've got the players. They're not. They shouldn't be where they are. They're clearly underperforming, but that was a massive result for Mallorca. There's only their second win of the season. The first came in week one, the first week against Eibar. They haven't won a game since. So to beat Espanyol already at this stage of the season, you could say rivals, 2-0 was a good win. Budimir appears to be an interesting player. Anti Budimir, the striker for Mallorca, another goal. And the familiar face in Salva Sevilla getting the second. So excellent win for Mallorca. But it's a really torrid time for Espanyol, but not as bad as Leganes, who still haven't won. They've got 3 points. Yeah, and Pellegrino and the players were cheered from the rafters after the game, which was quite, you know, surprising to see, pleasing to see. The club have come out, and I know it's a vote of confidence, but they said, nope, they're not considering his future other than the fact they believe he's the manager to get them up the table. So we saw it with Rayo last season, so perhaps it's becoming a trend now with supporters that they genuinely show, you know, support for a manager who's having a troubled time. But you're right, there's not a lot of difference between the teams at the bottom and mid-table and those, hopefully, the teams that we're hoping to improve this year. You could even include Celta Vigo in that position, that we're not sure where they're going to finish in the league at the moment.
Yeah, well, another one, isn't it? Yeah, so they beat Athletic by a goal to nil. Just one more game we haven't really mentioned, which is Betis against Eibar, which that was the one, my latest... I try not to rant about the VAR all the time, but the time taken to not give a decision is just extraordinary, because it was the Laurent Moron goal. You look at it through, and I can understand in real time why you might be confused. As soon as you look at a replay, you think, okay, he's onside. Or, you know, because there were two, they looked at two different phases of it. But they're looking and looking and looking for an offside that they can't find because he's not offside. And yet they seem to be desperately trying to prove something. But you can't prove a negative, of course, because in that case, because there wasn't an angle. And yet they keep looking. And one's from a bit nearer the corner flag, and one's a bit nearer the 18-yard line. And they give slightly different view, as they would, because that, you know, that's just how it works. And so eventually you just got to move on. But I timed it, Terry. And that was over 3 minutes. So you're sitting there, you know, you paid your money on, in this case, it's a Friday night. So 3 minutes of deciding whether it's a goal or not a goal. They had five on at the end. That runs to six in the end. But in that time, Escalante was sent off. So that's a minute. And then there's a free kick. So he's sent off after 7 seconds of added time. The free kick is played into the penalty area. The flag goes up again. And then we get into another VAR. So the added time that we got from the original VAR is then taken up by a red card and a VAR. So I think you ended up with about 30 seconds, I made it, of stoppage time for everything else that happened in the second half. I'm not advocating a separate timekeeper or anything. I just think, just get on with it. Just make a decision quickly and spare us from VAR taking forever. There's no need for it.
But I think the listeners, it'd be interesting to find out from the listeners, what's the bigger worry, VAR or John take time in VAR on a Friday night?
You know, my wife was
I'm going to ask them to get to me on Twitter, because you're not on it anymore.
No, yeah, you have to do a Twitter poll.
I'll take your point. It is, yeah, we're seeing slight variations again this season in La Liga. I think at times it's almost it's like they're copying the Premier League laws. And we've got these different laws throughout different leagues in Europe, different laws in the Champions League. And we're now getting the clear and obvious error in La Liga. The Levante penalty against Leganés was, I've seen it millions of angles, and it looks clear to me that Roger has kicked his own heels and gone down. It may even been outside the penalty box. And yet somehow VAR looked at it after the referee gave the penalty, understood why he could give the foul because it looked a foul. But when you see VAR, I'm not sure there's any contact. I think it's C of S. It does everything to avoid contact. Roger Martinez doesn't kick his leg on purpose. Just one of those you trip, and a bit like the Bruce striker. And the referee gave the penalty. VAR backed him up. So it's causing issues in all leagues. But it is, there are goals where you see quite correctly are ruled in or ruled out, if that's the right term and phrase, that it would be impossible for officials to spot in real time. The Aspas goal, the winning goal for Celta Vigo, was a clear example. I'm glad it was given because it was so close. But how is an assistant referee meant to get that right in real time? So it has benefits, but the main issue is taking too long, I think.
Yes, right. Shall we leave it there, Terry? I've got one more bit of bad housekeeping news from my personal point of view. Classico is at 1 p.m. UK slot, isn't it? It's the early Saturday slot, isn't it, on the 26th of October? And I can't watch it. I'm going to be commentating on Sheffield United, Sheffield Wednesday Leeds at the same time. So I'll have to go around not
That's
knowing
a
the score.
Big game, by the way.
Somehow. Yes,
Yorkshire
it is.
Yes. Big game, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's a strange time. I no idea why it is that time. We've seen various kickoff times, haven't we, for the Clásico. I guess it suits somewhere in the world. But it's that's a shame. But it's set up, what I would say about Clásico, it's set up perfect now, isn't it? With the 2-point gap, Real Madrid top, Barcelona second, a game after the international break before the Clásico. And, you know, it should be certainly something to look forward to for those that can watch it. Yeah.
Yes. I'll watch it. I'll watch it before we podcast, obviously. But yeah, I will be. I'll be the only person not watching it live. But anyway, I can't tweet about it. So there's nothing to be gained. And I won't be on Twitter anyway, so it won't be ruined for me. So there we are. Anyway, safe journey back from Barcelona, Terry, and we'll speak again and do another podcast soon.